Thank you, Cheryl. Good evening. So this evening we're going to be looking at the fourth of the five niyamas, svadhyaya, it's called. Svadhyaya is a bit weird, just type it in the room, svad. Let's have a look, svadhyaya. Svadhyaya, there might be an H in there, I've forgotten, so forgive me if I have forgotten it. But before we get going talking about that, we're going to begin with a consecration. So just closing the eyes and coming to wherever you are. And begin to move the awareness inside. So maybe that's to the breath, in and out of the nostrils, or maybe it's the belly. We're just going to make sure the back is straight, so the crown is lifted. We also feel rooted down through the base of the spine, and the shoulders relaxed to the side. So we sort of get a sense of the whole of the center of our chest just opening out. And then just being aware of any thoughts, we're going to see if we can just let them go and consciously move our awareness up and over the skull and down into the center of the chest. Feeling ourselves expand into heart space. And from here, we're going to make our offering of our time together this evening. Indeed, if you want to make an offering of your whole day. So just offering up whatever happens, whatever we hear, whatever we say, whatever we do, may the benefits, if there are any, be shared with all beings. We offer our time together in service to others. May all beings be happy. May all beings be healthy. May all beings be at peace. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Peace, peace, peace. And then we gently open our eyes. Okay, maybe you want to take a deep breath. So svadhyaya, what is it? What is it? It means self-study or perhaps self-inquiry, but certainly in yoga, the most common translation of svadhyaya is study of the self, the study of the self. And it also makes me think of the temple of Apollo, the oracle at Delphi. So if you don't know about what went down in ancient Greece at the Temple of Apollo, in the heart of the city of Delphi, there was a Temple of Apollo, and it was home to the Oracle. And she was a woman who it was believed could answer any question given to her. So from across the Mediterranean and beyond, statesmen and kings would come to seek her counsel. And, you know, she was so powerful that no colony was founded without her consent, no battle was fought without her input, no crop planted without her guidance. She was like the all-knowing. But upon entering the mystery of the oracle, those who came to consult with her would pass beneath this enormous gateway of stone. And into the stone, above the gateway, so in the gateway but above where you'd walk in, were inscribed two words that legend says were chosen by seven sages as a command for all seekers. And it was, I don't know how you say it, but I know it in English, and it was know thyself. Know thyself. And I think it's so interesting because, you know, here's the rub. People didn't look up. They didn't look up and they didn't notice, or if they did, they didn't really take it in. And so they ignored it. They just, you know, were looking for answers and walked straight in to ask someone else to tell them the answers. But if they had read those two beautiful words on the inscription above this big stone gateway, know thyself, and taken them to heart, then maybe they wouldn't have had to ask at all. And that would have really, you know, gone all that way for this pearl of wisdom, and that would have been the biggest wisdom of all. And that's really what svadhyaya is saying. It's saying, like, know thyself. And it's, you know, it's no joke. If you think about it, we've had all the Yamas have been guiding us in practices in the world and making us, or helping us to think about our relationship. And then we've now got the Niyamas, which are very sort of moving inwards. And here in the penultimate one is this know thyself, this self-inquiry, this self-study. And then next week is the final one, which is surrender. So this is like the ending, the end of the path is nearing. of course, this is just the second limb of yoga. There is still another six to go. So there's not really much to say about this particular niyama, and I'm going to talk about it. But I'm hoping that we'll have plenty of time and actually have a little bit of a meditation. So first, I just thought, let's clear up. When we're talking about self-study, which self are we talking about? So are we talking about the small self with a little s, or are we talking about the big self, the I we don't know, or the I we hope to know? So through the yamas, we begin our study into our small self, if you think about it. Stature is truth. So within stature, we were sort of watching where we're prone to exaggerate and watching how we want to lie about things, even in a small way, how we're sort of not able to just sit with truth sometimes. And in Himsa, we were looking at all the thoughts, our words, our actions, where they're violent, where they're not loving and peaceful, where they bring harm to others. And so we begin through these practices with the yamas to really begin to understand the small self. And it's the small self that's sort of our relationship to the world. We often dismiss this sort of study of the small self in this grander plan, spiritual seekers, we have for really just getting through to it and finding out who we are. So I wanted to sort of pause and talk about why it is just as vital and not to be dismissed, this self-study. And I truly believe that Svea refers to the two, although kind of with the hope that you've moved through a lot of study of the small self as you've progressed up to this point. So I was reading around, and I have like 8 books in front of me today to read from, and I was drawn to read a little bit of Inner Ramana. I just had this feeling, because you know, the essence of Inner Ramana is self-inquiry, that there would be something in there, and there was. So I'm just going to read from the teachings of Inner Ramana, on page 65 it is. It says, today I would like to speak more on self-inquiry. We are introducing two inquiries. I'm sorry, I don't know which one it is. Self-inquiry and self-inquiry, one with a small s and one with a big s. The two are not the same. And I will begin today by talking about the small s. With a small s, inquiry is questioning the false I in order to recognize that it is not truth, that it isn't you. It's merely attachment to the mind. A self-inquiry, with a small s, makes the false I self-evident, with a big s, bear with me. It is the decision of the bigger self that breaks the attachment to mind and lays the current story to rest. And as small self-inquiry is repeated over and over again, the attachment to mind is weakened, just as the scratch of a razor blade weakens the strength of a rope. Eventually, the razor blade works its way completely through the rope, and the attachment to mind is broken completely. Some will also call this shining the light of awareness on an idea that is dark. When the light shines, it is darkness, it disappears. So this sort of self-inquiry, as I mentioned, which is looking at our thoughts, looking at our beliefs, looking at our relationship to the world, uncovering our judgments, and looking at the mind, this really is all sort of all a way of beginning to loosen the mind's grip and then preparing us for this other self-inquiry, you know, the more sort of traditional self-inquiry of the who am I. So as we can sort of see here, it is just as important. It is important to sort of move through this path of inquiry into our minds and our lives and who we are, to uncover that we aren't who we think we are. And it's only when we uncover that we aren't who we think we are and we start to question, well, hang on, why do I have these beliefs? And are these thoughts really my thoughts? That we then become ready to be in a place where we can then make that dive into who am I. So I think sometimes we do feel pressured as spiritual seekers to follow the loftiest teaching or the one that's going to awaken us the quickest. And I don't know about you, but I often hear, well, who am I is the fastest route. that's fair enough. But depending on your karma and where you are in your karmic cycle, you may need to do still more of this self-study. You may still start to, you know, need to warm, juice yourself up to really sort of loosen some of those thoughts and beliefs that you have. And then it goes on, capital S, self-inquiry is different. Self-inquiry is a form of devotion where you incessantly seek the familiar, like seeking the familiar arms of the one you love. I love that. And you do not cease the seeking until you find her and are fully in her embrace, assured that you can never lose her again. That is the purpose of capital S, self-inquiry. It is seeking for the one you know. And then later it goes on to say, both self-inquiry, the small s, so just, you know, observing yourself as you perceive yourself to be in the world, and then self-inquiry, the who am I, lead in the same direction. The answer and destination are the same. You may use either or both. And that's, I say, from Ina Romano. So I just thought that was really, really interesting. As I say, just because it sort of encompasses or echoes the teachings of yoga and Svajaya of exploring both angles. And obviously Ramana Maharshi is neither one is better than the other. Although not everyone agrees with that. So in fact, Ramana Maharshi talks about in his book why the who am I method is preferable. So let me just get to that. So in the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi, someone asks him, why should self-inquiry alone with the capital S, who am I, be considered the direct means to jnana, to wisdom? And Ramana Maharshi says here, because every kind of sadhana, except that of the who am I questioning. So every kind of practice, so all the practices of the yamas that we've been doing, all those practices presupposes the retention of the mind as the instrument for carrying on the sadhana, and without the mind it cannot be practiced. So basically what he's saying is that all the small s self-study that we do and the practice requires the mind in some way. It requires the mind to practice it. Like, so we're using the mind to explore who we are. We're, you know, by looking at our thoughts, maybe sort of journaling and uncovering the root causes of our thoughts and beliefs and our judgments, or just questioning the words that come out of our mouth, or looking at behavior. Those kind of things require the mind to some extent. And so without the mind, they can't be practiced. And he says that the ego may take different and subtler forms at the different stages of one practice, but is itself never destroyed in those practices. So the attempt to destroy the ego or the mind through practices other than asking who am I is, and it is, I mean, it's more detailed than that, it's atmavichara, is just like the thief turning out a policeman to catch the thief, that is himself. So atmavichara alone can reveal the truth that neither the ego nor the mind really exists, and therefore enables one to realize the pure undifferentiated being of the self or the absolute. And so I hope that's kind of a little bit more helpful at sort of clarifying this difference between study with a small s and study with a big s. And depending on, you know, your own, what your own heart and guidance tells you, either one can lead to the other or support the other, or they're both the same. They both lead to the same place, which should be, if you do it, practice with earnestness and sincerity, you'll reach this point of knowing who you are. Okay. So the study of the self with a capital S, which really is what, you know, we're getting at with the root of this niyama, as I said, you know, through the yamas, we've had the practice of the small F self-study of our beliefs and relationships, beliefs and judgments, and letting those go. And now we get to this place where we're sort of ready to sit down, and mainly because we're so sick of these thoughts or words, and now we understand that they're not real. We're sort of ready to go beyond and find out, well, what's behind those thoughts, what's behind that. And that's really where the self-inquiry with a capital S comes in. What is behind the thoughts? And there are many, many different methods of doing this. So I'm just going to talk through a few of those methods, and before we get to practice on those methods this evening. So one is, and this is, you'll be familiar, probably through listening to Regina, or there's another evening in the sanctuary that looks at Michael Langford's work, and sort of collection of quotes that he has gathered, and that's and the practices he offers. And one is awareness, watching awareness. He also offers awareness, sort of loving awareness, the loving consciousness method. Both of those are self with a capital S, self-inquiry. They are trying to understand, get beyond the thinking mind to the root of who we are. And they're both practices around that. So I'm just going to read you one of the practices. As I say, I've got about six books open here. So let's see which one it is. Right. Okay. So, and this is from Self-Awareness Practice Instructions, and it's a series of quotes, Ramana Maharshi, Annamalai Swami, Nisargadatta, and several others that have been collated by Michael Langford. And he offers this awareness, watching awareness method, and it is such: shut your eyes, notice your awareness, observe your awareness, turn your attention away from the world, body and thought, towards awareness, watching awareness. Every time you notice you are thinking, turn your attention away from thought and back towards awareness, watching awareness. Watch your awareness, not your thoughts. And I thought this was sort of the key here. Watch your awareness, not your thoughts. So in self-study with a small s, you could say we were watching our thoughts. We were looking at the thoughts, we were analysing the thoughts, we were noticing that these thoughts were beliefs and judgments, and maybe they weren't even our thoughts, they seemed like collective thoughts. We were really observing the thoughts. But with self-study with a capital S, what we're doing is watching the awareness and not the thoughts. So as thoughts arise in the mind, what we're doing is saying, well, who's seeing those thoughts? Like, forget the thoughts, we're not interested in the thoughts. We already know, we've established that they're not real. And they're not mine, and they're not part of who I am. But who is observing them? Who is seeing the words? Who is hearing the words? Who is that? So it becomes awareness, watching the awareness. Yeah, watch your awareness, not your thoughts. I think that's really helpful. And then I'm just going to grab this one. Right. So then he also has the most direct means to eternal bliss, although I gather they might change that book. And he explains here, it's on page 94, awareness, watching awareness is similar to falling in love. You spend time with someone, you watch them, you observe them, you don't know them, you continue to observe them. You don't have expectations, you don't know them well enough, yet have expectations, you continue to observe them. Some days you have pleasant feelings while you observe them. Some days you have unpleasant feelings while you observe them. Just continue to observe them. So I really love this idea of just coming at watching your awareness, or aware of your awareness, with such sort of curiosity, but non-judgment, and sort of like a loving, but also like slightly giggly and enamored way of looking. So awareness, watching awareness, in a sort of very gentle, lighthearted way, just observing. Yeah, a sense of wonder, Kat says. And he goes on, so every day you come to know them better. What a beautiful thing. You think if we practice awareness, watching awareness every day, we will come to know awareness better. conscious of better who we are. Even though, he says, you may not even be aware that you're coming to know them better. But one day, suddenly and unexpectedly, you fall in love. And awareness, watching awareness, is similar to that. Just don't expect anything. Continue watching your awareness. The fact that nothing is happening is great. If it seems that day after day is just the same, only awareness, watching awareness, that's great. Just remain content with that. If you think it's going to change, then you are adding something to awareness, watching awareness, in the form of an expectation. Look at awareness, watching awareness as enough, just as it is. When will you fall in love with awareness, watching awareness? It may be 1 month, it may be several months. There's plenty of confirmation along the way. Do not be concerned about whether you are progressing. Progress may be imperceptible to the practitioner. And then goes on for many pages about all the things that may happen or may not happen and what to do by just allowing them to happen or allowing them to not happen as you practice awareness, watching awareness. So that is one form of self-inquiry. Then another is obviously Ramana Maharshi's Who Am I? Who am I? I am that I am. Who am I? So I just want you to read. And so then you can begin to see the similarities and what they're kind of all getting to. Right. So this is back from the spiritual teachings of Ramana Maharshi. And the question that he is asked is, how will the mind become quiescent? How will the mind become quiescent? And he replies, by the inquiry, who am I? The thought, who am I, will destroy all other thoughts. And like the stick used for stirring the burning pyre, it will itself in the end get destroyed. And then there will arise self-realization. Jim just says, who needs awakening? I'm just here for the fun of being. It's beautiful. I feel the same. Sometimes I forget I enjoy the journey so much. I think, oh no, you've forgotten the goal. And then I think, oh no, I think I'm supposed to forget the goal and enjoy the journey. And then I'm all muddled. But who am I brings me back. So who am I? What is the means for constantly holding on to a thought, who am I? When other thoughts arise, says Ramana Maharshi, one should not pursue them, but should instead inquire, to whom did they arise? So as you're thinking, we're not sort of interested in the thoughts anymore. We're simply asking, to whom did they arise? Who's thinking these things? It doesn't matter how many thoughts arise. As each thought arises, one should inquire with diligence, to whom has this thought arisen? The answer that would emerge would be, to me. Therefore, if one inquires, who am I? Who is me? The mind will go back to its source, and the thoughts that arose become quiescent. With repeated practice in this manner, the mind will develop the skill to then stay in its source. When the mind that is subtle goes out through the brain and the sense organs, the gross names and forms appear. And so as we sort of get drawn out and saying, the world sort of comes into being. But when it stays in the heart, he says, the names and forms disappear. So not letting the mind go outwards, but retaining it in the heart, in this inwards, who am I, and then resting in the I, is what is called inwardness, antarmukha. And letting the mind go out of the heart is known as externalization, bahirmukha. Thus, when the mind stays in the heart, the I, which is the source of all thoughts, will go, and the self, which ever exists, will shine. So the I will just be completely eradicated. Whatever one does, one should do without the egoity I. If one acts in that way, all will appear. Hello. Sorry about that. No, Jim, I didn't take a nap. It just booted me out. I don't know why. So sorry about that. Right, so I just said, if one acts in that way, all will appear as of the nature of Shiva God. So he's saying, even here, sort of repeating what Michael Langford said, Michael Langford's repeating what he's about, sort of just coming at it with, you know, just staying where you are, staying as much as you can to it without forcing it, just doing it without this I. Don't bring the I to it. Oh, if I stay here, I'll do it longer, and, you know, when am I going to feel, I think I'm feeling some weird sensations, maybe Kundalini is rising, I don't know, all those kinds of things that make them. He's saying, just let it go. Just let it go. Who's thinking that? Who's thinking that? And just always coming back to, I'm thinking that. Who's the I? And just coming back to this place that stays in the heart. That stays in the heart. And teaching. And so you'll see that these are all just echoed. And this is Sikkhadatta Maharaj. Sikkhadatta Maharaj. So this time, this is the importance of practice and effort. And again, this is a Langford collection of quotes. And this happens to be Sikkhadatta Maharaj in chapter one. So give up all questions except one, says, who am I? After all, the only fact you are sure of is that you are. The I am is certain. The I am this is not. Struggle to find out what you are in reality. And then he goes on. As long as you do not see that it is mere habit built on memory, prompted desire, you will make yourself to be a person, living, feeling, thinking, active, passive, pleased or pained. Question yourself, ask yourself, is it so? Who am I? What is behind and beyond all this? And soon you will see yourself, you have to be alert, or else your mind will play false with you. It's like watching a thief. Not that you expect anything from a thief, but you do not want to be robbed. Keep on remembering, I am neither the mind nor its ideas. Keep patient me and its conviction. Freedom from the ego self is the fruit of self-inquiry. So just another teaching of this importance of the self-study. Who am I? Who am I? So I'm going to share this experience I had last night. It's a bit odd. It may or may not be helpful. I hope it is. So I woke up about 5 in the morning and had some sort of mildly anxious thoughts. I noticed I needed to chime in the minute I woke. It was just about, world and Bill, my partner, and work, and the usual things. Jim has just asked, do you ever wonder how many different names you've carried in your journey to awakening? And I guess I'm going to kind of mention that in a bit with this experience I have. So I've been working with a gentle healing group, which is fantastic, and working through A Course in Miracles, and was working with lessons 11 and 12. So when I saw these thoughts, I was, going through those, these thoughts meaningless, and my meaningless thoughts show me a meaningless world, those kind of things. And then I had this thought to instead ask, who is the eye who sees these thoughts? To kind of just cut straight to the chase. Like, who is the eye that sees these thoughts? And I had this inkling that maybe that was where A Course in Miracles was leading me in the end, to get to that place behind the thoughts. So first you see these thoughts are meaningless, and then you start to question, hang on a minute, whose thoughts are these? And I read this teaching, and I can't remember where it was, but I read it last night, or certainly believe I read it. And it said, just ask every kind of question possible. Just go in and ask all the questions. So maybe it's not who I am, maybe it's just thinking this, and whose voice is that I hear. So I was very open to just asking and asking and asking, and really sort of delving in. My willingness was really high, because, it's 5 a.m. where else am I doing? So first I just observed the thoughts. So instead of the awareness, watching awareness, I was seeing the thoughts. And I saw that they weren't really mine, per se. So it felt like they were words and not thoughts. And it actually felt helpful to consider them as words and not thoughts. But when I thought, I almost attached myself to them. They're my thoughts. So instead, I just kind of saw words. And some were just random words I could sort of hear rather than see passing through the brain or wherever it was, somewhere with my eyes closed. And there were words like them eyes. Or just words that had no meaning to me. I haven't been thinking about lemon pies at all. And different words like that. And some had more meaning, I noticed. Some did resonate with me. So they pitched louder. I seemed to hear them at a louder pitch. And those words were words I then sort of attached myself to, sort of latched onto, and kind of left my seat as a sort of witness to these thoughts. And before I knew it, I was like thinking with the thought, the words were now sort of engaging in thought with me. I don't know how you would phrase it, but that's sort of what was happening. And then I would remember to step back and just observe the thoughts. sort of casting attention to them as they're real, as Kathy said, caught up in them. So I kept on just, you know, coming back to this idea of, well, whose thoughts? You know, what are these words? Where are these words coming from? And just really exploring, you know, some of these words didn't sound like they were even being said in my voice. In fact, none of them sounded like they were being said in my voice. Some were being said in all different sorts of languages and tones and levels. And I just, it was really interesting. And I kept thinking, so who, okay, so that's that. Now, who is it that's seeing me? So who is this who's hearing these words? Like, so now I'm into the awareness, watching awareness. I'm beginning to get closer, you know. Who hears these thoughts? And then it'd be, well, I do. And like, okay, well, who is the I? And then I was asking, who is the one that's asking these questions? And what I noticed was that the voice asking the question, who am I? Whose thoughts are these? Was sometimes a little boy's voice. It was sometimes a woman's voice. And I looked for Helen. And there wasn't one. And I just thought, well, I'm asking who am I? But even the voice that's asking isn't I. And so it was very interesting. Like, it felt like there wasn't one solid thing. There was no I. There's no I at all. So it almost felt kind of pointless. Like, I wasn't afraid. There was no I. My man, my thought, or, you know, maybe my ego was free. And I believe I sort of reached a deep, deep realization, although it was beautiful to experience it, because I didn't feel, you know, sometimes physically you feel like a huge, like, whoa. And I didn't feel that. But I wasn't afraid at all that there seemed to be no I. It just felt like the mind just was never going to grasp it. And that was it. So I could search for this I, but in the end, it would be an experience, because the mind would never be able to explain. So I feel like I opened a door in this who am I line of thinking. But part of that was really, I threw every question at it, whichever way I could. Like, who are these thoughts? Who's saying the thoughts? Who's hearing the thoughts? And just get around that way. I tried on who am I? Who am I over again? But sometimes it becomes like I'm not really in it, because I'm just repeating it like a parrot. So I found the different questioning was really, really helpful to me. And so I wanted to share that with you. And then afterwards, I had some very interesting, sort of very lucid dreams. Was like helping, and strange things happened. And so I felt maybe it put me in a place with a lot came out of those, which I don't need to share with you, because I don't know if they'd be helpful. But that practice was really, really helping. And I say, I've sat down before and done a lot of my practices and awareness, watching awareness. I felt very blissful. And this time I kind of saw that there was no I that could be uncovered by the mind. It just was never going to happen. Thanks for sharing that. So I talked a bit about A Course in Miracles, and I don't know it well enough, and maybe someone here can share their opinion. But it seems like, so far, because I've never completed it, I've got about 100 and something and given up and started again. It seems like it sort of takes... Thank you. I am having powerful issues tonight. So thank you, Cheryl. So I was just saying that, early to A Course in Miracles, this is not trying to do for. But I feel sort of opens up this idea of self-inquiry, or certainly approaches it from a really different angle, but one that ultimately gets the same place. It certainly got me to the same place last night and already this morning, sure. And so a couple of the lessons that have been early on that we've been doing, say, are looking at the thoughts that do they mean anything? What are these thoughts, the meaningless thoughts that I'm having, or nothing I see means anything. And it begins to just open up the mind and soften it up, which I feel is very similar, because once you start to get your mind into this very open space, then the mind can't grasp what it's doing. It can't answer some questions. It kind of just sits there a bit like what? And then in the lesson we had in the workbook lesson today, it's going to it on detail. It says, the ego rushes in frantically to establish its own ideas there. So if you don't what's happening is your mind is putting sort of thoughts and making the world as it goes along, you know, establishing its own ideas. But it's fearful that the void may otherwise be used to demonstrate its own impotence and unreality. So in this gap that occurs, there's almost this like point where the mind is trying to fill it, trying to fill the void by creating a story, by putting in a thought, by adding in a letter. But really, it's the observer, the awareness in that moment of it not doing that shines through. And that moment is kind of, you know, the God moment within us, that big S self. That's how we reach it. So there are different ways. One is through inquiry, and one is sort of, and another is through practice. Here we talked about a few weeks ago about unconscious. For example, when can do nothing, what can do? Whoa, mind is blown. And a Zen koan just puts us into this place where the mind cannot grasp onto anything. And so in that moment, we are kind of in awareness, watching awareness, perhaps. I'd love to hear what other people think about that. So I'm just going to, there's a few things up on the board, so I just want to read through them and see I'm not missing anything. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to share Jim's, maybe love. He was talking about asking who he was in past lifetimes. And he says, I asked quite a lot until one time I got a clear response that asked me, who cares? Yeah, okay. And then finally, the Bhagavad Gita, because if you remember, we are on the Bhagavad Gita only for another 2 weeks, and then we're doing the Tao Te Ching, which I'm really excited about. But the Bhagavad Gita, which is why we're here in the first place, also talks about this self-inquiry. In chapter 6, verse 14, sit thus in yoga meditation, serene and fearless, firm in the vow of brahmacharya, which we all know what that means now, self-control, moving that energy inside where we can move it towards enlightenment. And with the mind calm, think of me and only me. And this is essentially self-inquiry for the Gita. And Swami Sachidananda says here, erase all fear from the heart means don't be afraid of God, just be serene, think that you are the child of God, and you will experience fearlessness. And when Lord Krishna says, think only of me, he means the oneness. He means the oneness. And Jim's put the self-inquiry with a capital S points to oneness. And indeed, this is what this practice is. Sit down in meditation, serene, fearless. Retain all your energy inside. Don't let it be drawn away by senses. Don't let those thoughts or what you're hearing or your sensations let you draw away. And go inwards and think of only me. So when Lord Krishna says, think of me, he means oneness. Please know for certain that it's not his form or his day he's talking about. When he says me, he means cosmic essence, spirit. It's exactly the same when Christ said, only through me can you reach the Father. He didn't mean his body. That body didn't attain anything. It was just a composition of elements. He meant the spirit. Put your mind complete on that self, for the big S. Think of it, and you will be serene and fearless. Or think of it. Maybe a bit sort of confusing. Be aware of it. Sort of in your heart, think of it, rather than with your brain. Move into it. So that's the Bhagavad Gita. Okay, so that was kind of it. To say there's not really much to say, because ultimately words don't work. It's the mind and the words we really want to unravel. And in A Course in Miracles, I was reading yesterday, it says, beneath your words is written the word of God, which I really loved. And Nisargadatta Maharaj also talks about these words and says, the word itself is a bridge. Remember it, think of it, explore it, go around it. It's like trying to find a person knowing his name only. The day comes when your inquiries bring you to him, the name becomes reality. Words are valuable, for between the word and its meaning, there's a link. But if you investigate words, you cross beyond concepts and come to the root of it. So you have to go beyond the words. And he points out that so many words you've learned, so many words you've spoken, you know everything, but you do not know yourself. For the self is not known through words. Only direct insight will reveal it. Look within, search within. So on that, we're going to stop with all these words and have a meditation. So if you're feeling it, I'm just going to play some music. And I'm cheaply playing music so people who join in the room, if they join ready for the next session, that they'll know that there's people here. So because I am going to play a little bit of music, you might find it a bit distracting. So what I'm going to suggest is that you use the music to provide you with the question. So it will be, who is hating this music? Or who is hearing this music? Who believes the music to be a piano? And then gradually from those questions, you'll get yourself to the who am I. So we're only going to do the who am I today, or certainly this questioning around the who am I. So we're all on the same page and not getting confused. You don't have to worry about what to remember. We're just going to do who am I. And again, so if you notice a word arises and you sort of come off track, you know, you will be silent and try and sit in awareness, watching awareness, try and sit and find out and experience the who am I. If you notice yourself distracted at all, again, you know, pick another question. Use the questions as stepping stones to get you back to this question, ultimately, who am I, and rest in that, observe. Maybe it feels good, maybe the mind wants to fill in the void, just resting. Okay, so I'm going to put on some music in the background, trying not to crash Power Talk. So we're just going to sit comfortably. Why wouldn't we? Why would we sit uncomfortably? It's obvious. And then just start as we always. It's almost like the Bhagavad-gita to it. Just fearless, serene. Close the eyes. Just begin to move within. We're just going to notice what we feel. Are we holding any tension anywhere? Is there somewhere we could soften? Are we feeling a little like we'd rather jump off and go do something? I'm just taking it all in. Feel a bit itchy. I'm thinking about things you hear. You can hear sounds in your own homes. You can hear the sound of my heater, my dog snuffling. So you're just like beginning to notice things. And then letting those things just settle. And then noticing how the quality of presence, sort of the experience, changes with the observance of words. So just noticing the interplay between the experience of hearing and the words that arise from hearing. You know, we want to name things. Music, piano, dog. Noticing if you can hear and not choose the words. I'm just noticing this different, slightly different experience and then the words. And then we're going to begin the journey with the questioning. And ultimately, I'll leave you in about 10 seconds. So, as we sit and observe any words that arise, I'm just going to begin to ask, what words are these? Who is hearing them? Who is saying them? Where are they coming from? Who is asking the question? Who is the I? Okay. And again, if you notice that you slip out, you just simply follow that path, stepping stones of questions back, and ask as many questions as you want. So we're going to rest for the next 10 minutes, just with some music. And who am I?
Thank you.